SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hour number two of the early line right here on a Thursday morning live on Sports Grid. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside setting you up for some NBA preview. Of course, Thursday night football will be taking center stage, but there are still three games on this NBA board. Let's start with the Lakers and the Grizzlies. An interesting game because you have a Memphis Grizzlies team that lost their star, Ja Morant, against the Atlanta Hawks. They ended up losing that. They lost them in the middle of that game. They lose the game by 32. And you look at it and you think to yourself, wow, this is probably going to be pretty tough for this team. Well, they then proceed to run off five consecutive wins, seemingly getting more impressive as the run continued, covering all five of those games, multiple wins as a dog during that run. That was stopped against the Dallas Mavericks just yesterday, though, Donnie, at home as a one-point favorite, losing by eight. In comes the Los Angeles Lakers, who, again, against the number, certainly not a group that people are ever desperate to back. However, a comfortable cover last time out against the Celts, a banged-up Grizzlies team on the second leg of a back-to-back. Can the Lakers make it a second cover in a row?
Why not? -3. And what am I missing again, Kevin? Maybe I'm more of a cheerleader for the Lakers than you actually are here, because when they played the Celtics, I said, why is this line so low? The Lakers end up getting the win and the cover. So I look at this game here, which usually you would say, okay, the Lakers are -3. Oh, the Lakers are on a back-to-back on the road, and the Memphis Grizzlies are waiting in Memphis to pounce because they've been rested. That's not the case here. The Grizzlies played last night, and quite frankly, in a heated exchange late in the game with multiple players and coaches not happy with the referee, so a lot of energy expended. So now you have the Lakers coming to the town who should be rested and ready in this one, Kevin. I don't know if it's the square play or not, but the Lakers sitting here is a -3. I think they win this game tonight.
I do as well. And I think, again, this isn't about, you know, getting your head over your skis on the Los Angeles Lakers. I am surprised at this price. So the Lakers go out there, their best win of the season against the Boston Celtics. They win the game by 15 as a three-point home favorite. And we talked about that game as well, Donnie, and we thought the number was a little bit light on the Lakers, though they can be tough to get to the window on against the number at times, right? But they end up covering, they cover comfortably. And I'm just wondering how much of that is still factored in. Because usually, you always talk about this, I know, Donnie, with that Yankees, right? The Yankees tax. Yes. Maybe they should be -130, so they put their -150. The Lakers and LeBron should come with a tax, but they've been put in such a negative light early season. I can't stress this enough. The Los Angeles Lakers have been jumped by three teams in the Western Conference odds in 25 games. That is a surprising thing. They have been pushed into such a negative light. I wonder if it really does, Donnie, still create value on this team when we're talking about against the spread. And truly, for Memphis to have to play the second leg of a back-to-back without Ja Morant, which will be the first time this season, it is hard to get to the window, in my estimation, on that team. Another interesting spot on tonight's board. This will be your NBA TV game, which means probably a 3x2 game.
Oh, yeah.
The Utah Jazz take a trip to Philadelphia to play the Sixers. The Utah Jazz are a 3.5-point favorite. The total for this game is 217.5. Let me first bring in our radio audience. We appreciate all those tuned in to the early line on Sports Grid Radio. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside setting you up here on a Thursday morning for some NBA action. Donnie, the Sixers, second leg of a back-to-back. Same, though, true of the Utah Jazz. What do we think about this game?
Yeah, this makes it tough here for me if you're a 76ers backer early in the day, right? There's a reason why the Utah Jazz are 3.5-point favorites here, because we're probably waiting on the status, and rightfully so, of Joel Embiid to see if he's going to play in a back-to-back. Now, he played well in the first game against Charlotte, was used a lot of minutes here, as I believe they needed overtime to win that game. Played a lot last night, and as I said again, also got knocked in the head by Kelly Oubre going up for a dunk. So a lot of energy expounded in that game for him. We'll see if he makes it to the starting game, but also you're right, a second leg of a back-to-back also for the Utah Jazz. But we're going to take a look at 3x2s. This game has a really good feel for me for taking some three-point props. Now, even if you're taking a look in this game, Kevin, as a three-point prop probably to start the game, but these are some of the games that I look for towards live betting three-point props midway through this game. Because if you're looking at back-to-backs, Kevin, what usually happens here, much more bench is used because try to even out those minutes. So when you take a look at the Philadelphia 76ers coming off the bench, Shake Milton, Georgetz Niang, also Furkan Korkmaz, Isaiah Joe even getting involved in some three-point shooting. But then you take a look here, one of my favorite teams to bet three-point prop-wise, and it's nice to have them on the East Coast here. Jordan Clarkson fires away from the bench. I mean, what did he shoot, 10 three-pointers last night? Donovan Mitchell, Bogdanovich, Connolly. Mm-hmm. This one should be a fun one to line up. And as always, Kevin, when we're looking for those appetizers before Thursday Night Football, this one should be tasty.
Now, here's the thing on Utah, all right? Because Donnie's right. There's going to be a lot of question marks when you're talking about a Sixers team on the second leg of a back-to-back early in the day. We just don't know enough about Embiid. Listen to this, though, Donnie, on the Utah Jazz, all right? This group's gone out here, played 9 of their last 10 games to the over, 5 in a row. Listen to their scoring output, though, in those last 5, a 5-game winning streak. 127, 129, 137, 109, 136. They have scored 127 or more points in 4 of their last 5 games. That's a team total. Those are player props. Those are made three-point shots. That's everything when you're looking at a game like this here against the Philadelphia 76ers. We pause the action here. Up next, Rick Haro joins the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on SportsGrid on this Thursday. Joining us now on the early line, Sports Grid sports business analyst, the sports professor, Rick Haro. Rick, how are you this Thursday morning?
Well, it could be better. Last handoff, I guess, last week when I was on the one of these Thursday shows, we were in the effectively the green room right before the show started. You're trashing me from afar. What did you say about it? It wasn't vulgar, but it was disrespectful. I don't remember what you said, but I didn't like it very much. It's okay. But it's a holiday season, Rick, we're starting over. I respect your mind.
Rick, I think that's libel. I'll have to take you up to be my lawyer as I sue you for that absolute slander there, Rick. Also, I appreciate that you didn't have the ability to remember the show that you were on, is absolutely incredible. Now, let me ask you this, Rick.
Whatever.
That's right. Yeah, no, you're crushing it, Rick, this morning. How about the college football carousel for these head coaches, Rick? I mean, the changing of the guard, Donnie's talked about this on our show. Is the new goal to become a college football head coach with all the money that is running around this sport right now?
I have an announcement to make. I'm becoming Ed Ogeron's personal assistant. I'm going to walk him out to his mailbox for 18 straight months and get that $1 million check out of the mailbox and help him cash it. What a wonderful country. Yeah, it may be the new normal, but let's put it in perspective. These guys are running a $100 million a year company. They don't get stock, they don't do that. It's not a public company. And the way you protect yourself against being fired at a whim, and you would do that too if you had the leverage to do it, is by buyouts. Now, we don't like it, but the idea of how good a coach you are, unfortunately, is defined at the contract negotiation phase. When you negotiate, for example, in the Mario Cristobal idea, the $8-9 million Oregon buyout, because somebody, in the case of Miami, is going to match that. Same thing with Kelly, same thing with Lincoln Riley. That was by surprise. And so let's remember whether it's outrageous, and the chemistry professor ought to get more because he's doing more for the kids. I personally blew up the lab when I took chemistry. The bottom line is the idea of valuing the coach is with the buyouts, and the boosters are the ones that pay it. We all know that.
I know. It's pretty impressive, too, how college football is sort of getting into the arms race. It used to be you tried to make it to the NFL where you got the five-year contract for $25 million. Now these college football coaches signing for 10 years and upwards of $100 million guaranteed. It's amazing stuff to watch. But I got to say, we like to talk gambling here, Rick, and keep it in the state of Florida. Mario Cristobal, huge money. Maybe he wants to get down some wagers there at the Hard Rock. But having said that, when you take a look here, Rick, what is going on with Florida and the betting scene right now?
If Mario Cristobal wants to go place a bet on his own team or anybody else, he's got to go to Jersey. He's got to go to Vegas. He can't go to Miami or Florida. Listen, I'm a 80-year veteran or whatever it is of the state of Florida, and I remember in the early days we were striving to get gaming because it was an enlightened state, and it is in the Indian gaming with the Seminoles case, $2.5 billion over 5 years just with that deal. And even 40 years ago, it was big money. Well, we didn't get it then. We almost got it now, and we may get it. There will be an expedited appeal. In my world, expedited appeal is anywhere from 6 months to a year, unless there's some injunction. And frankly, the guys that I know that are the casino operators or the racetrack operators or the paddock operators, they're upset, but they understand they don't want to incur any expenses if the server, which is Hard Rock, shuts down and you're not allowed to do any betting. So let's remember, you've got a lot of groups that are hiring significant staff and doing a lot of promotion, and it was supposed to start October 15, then November 1, then December 1. Florida is postponement state. You give me a December deadline, and I'll turn it into May.
Rick, let's stick with the college football landscape right now. Bowl season is about to be upon us. I know you're going to cover this extensively, but I want to bring up another point that I know as well Donnie took college football to task on with the college football playoff and them putting the games on New Year's Eve. They did this once. Everybody hated it. They stopped doing it. Rick, why are they doing this again?
Well, it's the calendar. And, maybe we have some ways to change the calendar, but when you have a Friday, Saturday, Sunday where New Year's will be up exactly against the NFL, the NFL controls, and then you could have done it Monday, the day after New Year's, and the day after that, and you get into the second or the third, but they've set those dates understanding that it won't happen again until we have a 12-team playoff or so. It's just the luck or the non-luck of the calendar. You know, that being said, kudos to my friend Steve Ross, by the way. His team, my Dolphins, 6 in a row, 5 in a row. Well, they'll play the Jets after the bye, so that's 6 in a row. Take it to the bank. Mm-hmm. The Jet, take the Dolphins, and you can give 20. It doesn't really matter. The bottom line is he scores a comeback with that team, and a Michigan guy, as we know, guess what? He gets the semifinal where Michigan plays Georgia in his stadium. That's a great thing. It's great to be Steve Ross today.
By the way, also, picking up on the bowl scene here, as Kevin said, I'm an advocate of less bowls and more playoff games here. So the bowl business going on right now is we're set for 42 bowl games. Is it a robust business that we're looking to add more bowls? Or are some of these teams and some of these organizations, meaning the team, the guys that set up these bowls, struggling a little bit financially, Rick? How about the health of these bowls moving forward? What can we anticipate?
How's this for a legal answer? It depends on how you define robust. What? That doesn't tell me anything. What are you talking about? Well, but that's the right answer because the bowls are an ESPN family of networks creation, in essence, all but three. By the way, I'm torn because I'm going to the Bahamas Bowl, and I will provide Sports Grid with exclusive, extensive coverage of the conch salad in Nassau. That's really important. And then you go all the way through the schedule, and you see Pinstripe Bowl, Fenway Bowl is just starting in that midweek, and I may go see Miami play Washington State in the Tony the Tiger Bowl. I can't miss that one in El Paso. But all in all, if you're a purist and you're talking about on the field, 17 6-6 teams, Hawaii 6-7, an outlier more than ever. The Myrtle Beach Bowl, the Pinstripe Bowl, the Frisco Bowl, a couple others. Those are barn burners, 6-6, 6-6, and so. From that perspective, too many bowls. From the other perspective, you've got a made-for-TV event, stadium packed in one corner so the cameras can get it, with alumni from those schools. And you've got the ability to have the rich alumni watching the games. Those are, according to every metric, people that buy stuff. The betting is going to be prolific in those pockets of areas where the teams are playing. And when when Memphis plays Hawaii, 6-6 against 6-7, you can bet there will be a lot of action on those teams from those alumni groups. And also, it gives the people extra time to practice the new coaches. It gives the alumni a trip. It gives the players an award. Yeah, it may be too many bowls, but let's forget that debate because it's here. And the next big change will be when the 14 playoff morphs to 6 or 8 or 12, and then how many of those bowls make it into that playoff system? I think as many as possible.
Rick, quickly, with only about 30 seconds left, I have to ask you, the Staples Center, is anyone going to stop calling it actually the Staples Center and refer to it as Crypto.com Arena? It feels like a terrible investment.
Well, it's not a terrible investment if you realize all the money that crypto has as a Chinese company to be able to not only do naming there, but they're doing a major conference in April on cryptocurrency, and they're doing a whole lot of stuff that relates to getting their name out. The fact that you asked that question, you know, a couple of months ago when you were in L.A., you wouldn't even think about that. Now you got the Super Bowl, you've got the Olympics, you've got all of the stuff in L.A., and this will be the center of activity at L.A. Live. You guys have a wonderful weekend since I have the last time. I'm going to let you get out, so I'll shut up.
Thanks, Rick. You should have took us to break, though. I would have loved that move. That's the sports professor right there. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
College basketball time on this Thursday, as there are a couple of interesting games on this college basketball slate, one featuring a couple of teams inside the top 25. Now, if you're a Jersey bettor, you might not be able to participate because, well, it's just a terrible rule. It is what it is, though, Donnie. We can still talk about it as we are national here on the grid, baby. Seton Hall is a 2-point dog against Texas at the Prudential Center tonight. This is a really interesting spot here to me because you have a Texas team that has played 7 games, 6-1. Their 6 wins have been 6 games in which they have been a 20-point favorite or better. Their 1 loss to Gonzaga, a 7-point dog, losing the game by 12. Essentially, Donnie, they played 1 real game, but it was against maybe the best team in the country and were not able to get the job done. Playing Seton Hall tonight feels like a game that Texas needs if they're going to maintain their status as a top 10 team in the country. What do you think about this one here tonight?
Yeah, Chris Beard moving over from Texas Tech over to Texas here. And the one thing that he did bring with him is some pretty good defense and also a slower tempo, one of the slower teams in the nation. But if we're taking a look in this early season, Kevin, I think you already hit the nail on the head. You take a look at this. Okay, yeah, the 6-1. And then you see like Houston Baptist, Cal Baptist, Sam Houston State, UT, Rio Grande Valley. So I don't know how much you want to put into that, but they did lose to Gonzaga. But at the same time, you're saying, okay, Seton Hall coming in hot after a huge win versus NIAC, 113-67. But if we're taking a look at this game overall for myself, I think a little bit more battle-tested here, Seton Hall coming in, because they did play Michigan, Ohio State, and Cal. So a little bit of a leveling up, but they did go down in competition. Bethune-Cookman picked up an easy victory. Wagner picked up an easy victory there. I'm going to take the short price here on the dog at home in Seton Hall in this one. Give me the Pirates here, Kevin.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. It's a Seton Hall team, right, that played Michigan and Ohio State. And those are legitimate games. And now they're home for this game. We've seen that matter in college basketball. And you look at this Texas team, and it's college basketball. Yes, we love Chris Beard. And yes, we think the roster can be good. And I know it is a group that a lot of people feel like can legitimately win a national championship this year. But truly, they've only played one relevant game. 6 games as a 20-point or better favorite. And then the 1 game as a dog, they lost. I agree with you here, Donnie. I think Seton Hall at that 2 points makes some sense early on. Another game between a couple of strong teams. We've got two of the top teams in the country in action. We'll talk about those. But another game, Donnie, that I know people will be really interested in is going to be Iowa State and Iowa doing battle. And you have an 8-0 Iowa State team that I think has surprised people early season. They are a 4.5-point dog to the Hawkeyes. Now, this is one of those games that I know, Donnie, people are going to hold on a minute. Number 17, home, getting 4.5 against an unranked? You don't usually see lines like this, Donnie. What's your read here?
Yeah, and back-to-back losses here for Iowa coming in, too. Lost to Purdue 77-70, which is no shame in that because Purdue is a very good basketball team. And also losing to Illinois 87-83, two close games. And now they're going to take on Iowa State. So as we take a look at this game and what we like, Kevin, what do you know about Iowa? Unbelievable offensive efficiency. They don't turn the basketball over. They rebound well. They shoot the three-point shot. They shoot from inside the arc. Also, how about this one, Kevin? When you get late in the game and you're looking to cover, I don't know, a 4.5-point spread, what's better than as a team shooting 78% from the free throw line. But taking a look here with Iowa State, Kevin, you take a look at some of the teams that they've beaten here. Oregon State, Division I team, nice win. Xavier, Division I team, nice win. Memphis by close to 20 points, actually a 19-point victory there, also beating Creighton. Dare I say, I want to take a look here in Ames tonight at Hilton and use some of that Hilton magic as an underdog. But you're right here, Kevin. Isn't this the setup? Didn't you take a look and say it yesterday with UConn and West Virginia? Now, hold on here. Ranked team, unranked team, one team's favorite here. That plays into that mold. But should I just dip my toes in the water here and take on the Cyclones here? I think I just might.
This is the thing, though, about – so the West Virginia line, Donnie, we see that – all the time. You'll see it a bunch of times this year in college basketball. Home, unranked team as a favorite. I'm trying to think, because it happens in both college sports, Tony. I am trying to think if during this college football season, did we ever see a home ranked team catching points against an unranked team, of course, is what we're talking about here. I mean, it is a very rare scene. Now, a big part of that is Iowa State did not enter this season with a lot of expectations, but they've blown past those expectations. Again, not only beating Memphis, as Donnie mentioned, by 20, but how about a win against Xavier by double digits, cashing a 3-1 money line ticket as a pretty considerable dog. And then even their last game out, Donnie, at Creighton, about a 2-1 money line ticket you cash there. It's a spot where I'm almost wondering, Don, if you leave the 4.5 points. And we know that's always risky, right? Yeah, you take the points. Don't be, you know, you sprinkle money line, you take points. But you say, you know what? If Iowa State's going to cover, it's because they're going to win this game, and they're going to actually show that they are a top 17 team in the country. I will quickly add, though, 7-2 to the over early season for Iowa. That's the kind of stuff you like to see, a total right now at 150.5. Now, potentially the two best teams in all of college basketball are in action. We will start with number one, Purdue, taking a trip to Jersey to play Rutgers. Again, Jersey folks won't be able to get involved with this game, which is a shame because it's, you know, we're talking about two of the better games on this slate. But Purdue donning a 12.5-point favorite on the road, a 139.5 over under.
Yeah, what's the old saying? Go here. You just don't walk in the Jersey Mike's Arena in Piscataway, New Jersey, and come away with easy victories. I don't think that's going to be the case tonight here, Kevin, because we take a look today. The Purdue offense, efficiency, the best in the country. How about this, Kevin? If I told you a team that doesn't defend the three-point shot all that well in Rutgers going up against a Purdue team that shoots 44% from three-point range, how about inside the arc, 60%? How about the free throw line, 75%? There's going to be a reign of terror tonight in Piscataway, and that's called Purdue winning by double digits and covering this line. They're impressive on offense. It continues tonight, Kevin.
Look, this is another spot where – so the only time the Purdue team total didn't hit was their last outing against Iowa, which was pretty funny enough because we just talked about all of Iowa's trends in terms of playing, you know, towards the over, right? That game ended up slowing down a little bit in the second half. It was also a pretty high number with a pretty high total. But here against Rutgers, for that number to be sub-80 is quite surprising. The one argument that I would listen to. If you're saying I'm taking Rutgers plus the points, or I'm cautious on any Purdue, you know, team totals and things like that. First road game of the season, of the year for this team here. There have been a couple of neutral sites, certainly been home their fair share of times. We have not seen them travel for a road game. Now, yes, Jersey Mike's Arena, does that strike fear in the heart of opponents?
Yes, it does.
And then again, Rutgers almost got to the tournament during that pandemic season, essentially entirely on the back of their home wins. So that would be the caution sign, if you will, on the Boilermakers. Enough time to certainly talk about Gonzaga in action. Now, Purdue, conference game, Rutgers, 12-point spread. Gonzaga, not so much. 31-point favorite here against Merrimack. 136.5 is the over-under. I tell you, Donnie, I see a Gonzaga game. I see 136.5, and I say, what is going on? Don't they always play into the 150s? Although, Donnie, so far at home, the Zags, 4-1 to the under.
Yeah, it is interesting. Now, also, Kevin, take a look here at this game, right? So usually we like to focus on overs in games. Maybe we like to focus on a team total over for Gonzaga. I'm looking opposite here. If there is a way, and I haven't checked yet here, on a team total under for Merrimack, and here's why. One of the slowest teams in college basketball. So usually you think of maybe the Virginia Cavaliers of the past. Slow team, ultra efficient on offense. That's not the case. So you get slow and terrible on offense tonight in Merrimack. Take a look at their offense. Adjusted efficiency numbers, 323 out of about 360 in the country. Field goal percentage, you're effective, 314. You're taking a look at one of the worst offensive rebounding teams in the nation. So let me get this straight, Kevin. You're terrible in efficiency, and then when you miss shots, you can't even get any rebounds. This sounds like a easy win for Gonzaga, but more importantly, one of those games, Kevin, I won't be surprised. Say, now, hold on here. Gonzaga's up 35-7. Is this a football game in the first half? Maybe so. Give me an under, if it's possible, on Merrimack's team total.
So that number, just doing the math, Donnie, because it's not listed right now, probably 52.5, 53.5. I will say, I mentioned the Gonzaga under trends at home. How about Merrimack? 5-0 to the under on the road this season. So do not expect a lot of scoring, as Donnie is saying, for this team on the road. I will say, though, I'm very interested if Gonzaga covers this number. Again, it's Merrimack. It doesn't matter. Unless they lose, then it is headline news. Other than that, it is meaningless. However, Gonzaga went out there, lost to Duke by 3. And I think there was a lot of people who said, psh, Tarleton, come on now. They're going to go out there. They're going to cover a 32-point spread. They're going to beat up these guys. And they all of a sudden found themselves in a very bizarre battle with Tarleton and a bang under as well. And then Alabama ends up beating Gonzaga. So I wonder if tonight Gonzaga comes out slow again, or now do you get a motivated Gonzaga team that really has underperformed and underwhelmed their last 3 outings against Merrimack, and that might be on the defensive end and hold that group to like 40 some odd points. It'll be an interesting one to follow, but Thursday night football is next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, it is time. Thursday night football here on the Early Line. Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside on this Thursday morning, breaking down a 3-point spread for the Minnesota Vikings at home and a 43.5 over under. As we mentioned at the top of our show, expectation is that Dalvin Cook is going to give it a go tonight for the Minnesota Vikings. A monster impact on your props specifically for this game. Before we get to the props though, Donnie, let's start side, let's start total. What do you think, Vikings Steelers?
I think it's a pretty interesting line as we take a look at it, but I do think it is a fair line, Kevin, taking a look here at the -3 as a favorite towards the Vikings. And most people say, now hold on, they just lost to a team that was 0-10. How are they going to be favored here? Did you watch the Steelers? Yeah, the Steelers just beat the Ravens. It's a week-to-week league in the NFL. We understand it. Also, keep in mind, the Pittsburgh Steelers, just like the Minnesota Vikings, on a short work week, but the Pittsburgh Steelers have to travel to play Minnesota while Minnesota is at home. But also, what do you like a little bit about the Minnesota Vikings, just looking from a side perspective? Probably going to get much healthier than they were just a week ago here. Dalvin Cook looks like he might play. Adam Thielen not going to play, as he was hurt last week on the first drive of the game against the Detroit Lions. But also Anthony Barr, good chance that he plays tonight, as well as Eric Kendricks, and also getting back Peterson as one of your cornerbacks. So, in theory, they're going to be much more healthy than they were last week. You're looking for also the next step in the evolution of the offense for the Minnesota Vikings to be Kirk Cousins continuing with his ridiculous regular season pace of touchdown passes to interception ratio. But you are going to be down Adam Thielen, but that's going to focus a lot more on Justin Jefferson. Also keep in mind from a Pittsburgh perspective coming into tonight, sure, we love T.J. Watt rushing the passer. Got some athletic linebackers to get after Kirk Cousins. But also, taking a look from the secondary, Joe Hayden, probably the team's best cornerback, is not going to play tonight. So we'll see if that dome atmosphere is going to make sense. For me tonight, I actually think the Minnesota Vikings do win this game. Do I love the -3? Not necessarily. But one thing I'm looking at a little bit more than they side, Kevin, is the total in this one. Sitting at the FanDuel Sportsbook here at a 43.5, there's a legitimate chance that both of these teams get into the 20s, which means you'll be pushing that number of 44 to cash in that ticket. And I think it gets there.
I agree. I look at the Minnesota Vikings, Donnie. They've played three consecutive overs in four of their last five. And all five, though, of those games featured more than this listed total of 43.5. And especially the games, though, that were going over. I mean, bang, bang, big time overs here. 34-31 Baltimore. 34-31, they beat the Green Bay Packers. 34-26 against the Niners. And then the 29-27 loss to the Detroit Lions. Very high scoring games for the Minnesota Vikings. You look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, and there's certainly questions always. Can I trust Big Ben? What will I get from Big Ben? And I understand that they're getting a little bit healthier on the defensive side of the football than maybe the 2 weeks, Donnie, on the road where they gave up 41 back-to-back weeks against the Chargers and then the Cincinnati Bengals, holding Baltimore to that 19 spot. But we also know it's funny because it's always changing the NFL, Donnie. I feel like Ravens Steelers will always be a very close field goal game that is going to be held kind of under a total. That's just the way those games are built. So I agree. The total looks a little bit low here tonight. I think you can like towards the over. I think the side is difficult because we know Pittsburgh and how good they perform as an underdog, but also, if Mike Zimmer really has any juice left as a coach, he covers in this spot at home against a non-conference opponent almost always. I remember hearing about that trend when I was doing an in-game live with Gabe like 2 years ago, and it was every single time an AFC team rocked up to Minnesota, Mike Zimmer and the Vikings would cover. Now, maybe not the same group this year. We've seen some struggles at home, certainly from them. But that's why, again, the side feels like a spot, Donnie, I'd rather stay away from. Let's then talk about the props. We usually start with quarterbacks. But just, I want to ask you, Donnie, how you plan to approach the Dalvin Cook situation tonight. I know I'm just hoping he's out. I think it doesn't muddy the water. It makes things a lot easier on guys like you and I who are going to look to get involved in the props market tonight. What's your expectation and then potentially your plan?
Yeah, Dalvin Cook's pretty tough cookie here. You remember him back in college, Kevin, at Florida State, where he was running wild over everybody, even though he had basically two torn hamstrings. So when this guy's healthy, or if he's not even healthy and still wants to play, he's going to give it a go. So if we're looking at the running back props here, probably taking that out of the market from a Viking side. But I do want to look at the market here for wide receivers, and particularly with both teams here. If we're looking at Deontay Johnson for the Steelers here and why we like them, I don't really like Ben Roethlisberger this year. I really don't. Probably going to be his last year in a Steelers uniform and maybe last year in the NFL overall. But I've talked about this multiple times this week, Kevin. When you're looking at Ben Roethlisberger, where do you want an old aging quarterback who seems to lost a little bit off of his fastball? You want him in a dome. You don't want him in Pittsburgh playing outdoors where it's 35 degrees and the wind is whipping around. So you're going to get him indoors. Last time we saw the Pittsburgh Steelers offense indoors, almost 40 points on the board and multiple touchdown passes out of Big Ben. But let's take a look at the wide receiver position. Deontay Johnson coming into this game. 79.5 as he's listed here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. You say, boy, that seems like high. Maybe I don't want to go that direction. But look at his last four games, Kevin, coming into his own. 83 yards versus Detroit. And that wasn't even with Big Ben. That was in the rain against the Detroit Lions with Mason Rudolph at quarterback. 101 yards receiving versus the Chargers. 95 yards in a blowout loss to Cincinnati. And 105 yards last week against the Baltimore Ravens. So even though his price is high at 79.5, I think there's a really good chance that he gets over. Now, there's a lot of movement yesterday on the board when you're trying to take a look here at the wide receiver position for the Minnesota Vikings. You're looking to try to get away in the Justin Jefferson. Yes, he's been sensational. But now that you have Adam Thielen out of the lineup, where does that turn to? You know me, depressed markets with wide receivers with low totals. KJ Osborne opened up as a wide receiver 2 yesterday on the board at a 40 price here to go over his receiving yards. That has risen today here at the FanDuel Sportsbook to 44.5. I still think there's a legitimate chance that KJ Osborne, with so much of the focus going on the opposite side here with Justin Jefferson, that they might not pay enough attention. He should be able to get 50 yards tonight. I think they're two legitimate props to look at, Kevin, from a wide receiver's perspective.
I think that is, of course, the other piece of this puzzle, Donnie, is the absent Adam Thielen in tonight's props market and figuring out who could be the biggest beneficiary. Last year in the game, Adam Thielen missed one game last year, and it was actually Beasley Johnson who led the way with 7 catches and 74 yards. But guess what? He was one, listen to this, of 4 players with 7 catches. Kirk threw the ball 34 of 45 in that game. Wow. Justin Jefferson, 7 for 70. Kyle Rudolph, 7 for 68. And then Chad Beebe, interestingly enough, certainly some of these guys won't be available tonight, ended up with 7 catches as well for 63 yards. However, what really stands out to me, Donnie, was not only 13 targets for Justin Jefferson into the end zone twice. And we saw him into the end zone in the second half against the Detroit Lions with Adam Thielen out. While I think Justin Jefferson is the better wide receiver than Thielen, Thielen is a touchdown machine. But removing that from the puzzle now certainly, I think, introduces Justin Jefferson as a more legitimate option in that anytime touchdown scorer market. But like you mentioned, the yardage, it's up to 90.5. You are paying a premium in that market unquestionably here tonight if you try and get involved with the Jefferson yards. It doesn't mean he can't get there. It's just serving as a reminder that that is certainly no discounted number here tonight, DRS. Looking elsewhere, of course, these quarterbacks are always guys that you could mention. It's the ebbs and flows, right? Big Ben in a good environment here tonight. His passing total, 252.5. Funny enough, the same exact number. I don't know if I've ever seen this before with Kirk Cousins. What's interesting is when you add 252 and 252, you get 504 yards. And you start to ask yourself, what happens if these guys throw for 500 yards? What happens if they throw for 4 passing touchdowns? Well, all of the sudden, you start cashing some tickets there, Donnie, at around a plus 330 price in the game specials market here. DRS, let's talk game specials. What's catching the eye early on?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be involved here. You know, the touchdown passes for quarterbacks in each half, you know, or just individually, that's going to make a lot of sense. But you just brought up a pretty good one here where, you know, each of these quarterbacks, I do think, Kevin, both of these guys go over 250 yards. But again, not sure they can combine for 500 passing yards in this game and 4 touchdowns if you can find that riddle here. But looking at this game overall, I do think it's legitimate here. And again, you have to sort of be the chameleon that I always talk about in the gambling space. Even if I don't like, and I don't think I bet a team total, even approached a team total with the Pittsburgh Steelers all year, but I like the Pittsburgh team total tonight around that 20-point number here at the FanDuel Sportsbook. But also if that means if they're going to score 20 points, that means they're going to score at least 2 touchdowns, possibly 3 or more. I think Big Ben Roethlisberger, who last time again he played in the Dome against the Chargers, Kevin, threw 3 touchdown passes, there's a good chance that he can throw at least 2 in this game. So at the FanDuel Sportsbook, book tonight over 1.5 touchdown passes for Big Ben, listed at a minus 122 price. I think it makes sense. Now, also, when we're trying to shape up and see what happens here, you're sort of focused on Dalvin Cook not being a big part of the offense or possibly not playing tonight. Still a good chance that we wait till the inactives to see if he's actually in the lineup. But if he wasn't in, I do like this touchdown prop here. Again, giving you four guys to combine for four touchdowns, which pays out at a plus 260 price. That was Najee Harris, Madison, Johnson, and Jefferson. So two legitimate wide receivers on both sides who I think can both score touchdowns. And then you throw in the two starting running backs. That would be legit. But boy, oh boy, if you bet that number, and then it's Dalvin Cook getting the start, and of course, Dalvin Cook rushes for two touchdowns like we think he possibly can, that would ruin that up in smoke. So those are the ways that I'm looking to go. But obviously, adding on a little bit later, I want to see how healthy Dalvin Cook might be and if he is going to make it to the starting gate tonight here, Kevin.
What I'm also waiting to see listed, Donnie, they always have the most passing yards in a game, receiving yards in a game, rushing yards in a game. Is the receiving yards price on it being Justin Jefferson with the most? So his prop's 90.5. Deontay Johnson next closest at 79.5. Now, Deontay Johnson's been getting after it. Last 4 weeks, 83, 101, 95, 105. Great numbers. But Justin Jefferson, his last 4 weeks, 143. 169, 83, 182. His ceiling is so high that might be a way I'm a little more comfortable, Donnie. And then maybe instead of going over that 90.5 mark for Justin Jefferson, if it's minus 120 range for him for the most receiving yards in this game, that would be a little bit interesting. Also, it's plus 290 for him to have 100 yards and a touchdown in this game. That's not bad. Also, a FanDuel boost tonight for Justin Jefferson and Najee, each to get into the end zone at plus 350. I'd be remiss if I didn't quickly bring up, even though I know we're talking football, LeBron to score 25 and the Lakers win from plus 230 to plus 280. We both think the Lakers win. LeBron's last four games, 39, 30, 33, 23, 30. Donnie, an NBA boost tonight?
It sounds like a plan here because we do need some appetite. This will be a later appetizer for us because I'm focused on the Philadelphia 76ers tonight. But yes, we will make money tonight on In Play Sports Tonight.
We will see you there, 7 p.m. Eastern start time on Sports Grid Radio. But don't go anywhere just yet as Donnie asks you to listen up. And he closes out the early line here on a Thursday morning right here, of course, on the Sports Grid Network. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Segment of the day for the early line right here on Sports Grid Sirius XM channel 159. Both myself, Donnie Wrightside, and Kevin Walsh carried you through from 7 to 9 as we hand it off to Ben Stevens and the Morning After momentarily. But I get these 2 minutes and you have to listen up. All right, week 14 in the NFL, I like to say, tis the season to be jolly here. Why? Because of NFL teams now are in evaluation mode, and some NFL teams are actually trying to make the playoffs and win a championship. So there lies in the middle where you can get some information that could help you be a better gambler. As I like to say, the last week of the season, which was typically week 17, one of the few weeks of the years that the coaches actually tell you the game plan and what is going to take place and who is going to play. This year, with the extra game, it's week 18. But there's no reason to believe that this has already started here in week 14 of the NFL season. Take a look at some games here this weekend coming in. New Orleans Yeah, going to have Taysom Hill out there. Evaluation process. Can he be your starting quarterback next year? And also on the opposite side, looking at Zach Wilson, the same things. You're also looking at Jacksonville and Tennessee. Trevor Lawrence, disappointing rookie year. Disappointing year overall for Jacksonville. Still looking for him to open it up and head into the offseason to see if he is going to be the future quarterback that everybody thought he was going to be when entering in from Clemson into the NFL. But I take a look at the next two games here. I want to talk about Seattle and Houston. We're not talking about the evaluation process of Russell Wilson and is he going to be into be Seattle's quarterback of the future or get traded. It's actually with Davis Mills. The Texans tried to come back after the Tyrod Taylor injury and win football games. It was apparent they couldn't do that. So now they are in quote-unquote evaluation mode on Davis Mills. We'll see what happens this weekend, but I don't think a lot of good things. And also Justin Fields back into the starting lineup for the Chicago Bears. Evaluation process. Use this to your advantage and try to make some money. But you know what you need to do next? Got to watch Ben Stevens in the morning after over the next 3 hours right here on the Sports Grid Network. For Kevin Walsh and Donnie Wrightside in the early line, see you tomorrow.
The only place to turn for expert sports gaming strategies and information.
But we just call it
The Edge.
This is